The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTates.com studios.
It's Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us on the road, Brad Sesmatt, Sports360AZ.com, on White Mountain Radio, on Twitter at Brad Sesmatt, and AZ Central Sports. It is good to be with you. Today we're broadcasting from up in Sholo Pine Top. We're at Locano's Restaurant. It is a terrific place. Getting caught up with all the good people at White Mountain Radio. I want to thank Frontier Communications for residential commercial service. All you have to do is call Frontier Communications. Appreciate their support in the show. We have a great show today. Russ Pennell will join us, former head coach at Grand Canyon University, now the head coach at Central Arkansas, talking about March Madness. Always good to talk with Russ, as we're Arizona-centric. Ron Borges is going to be with us, one of the top NFL writers in the country with the Boston Herald. Ron is in Orlando at the NFL owners' meetings. Big news today out of there involving replays, Michael Vick going to the Jets, DeSean Jackson. Is it buyer beware because the Eagles don't want them? We'll talk with Ron Borges from the Boston Herald live at the NFL owners' meetings. And then Pedro Gomez will join us in hour number two. Always good to catch up with ESPN baseball analyst Pedro Gomez, a big part of what we do here at Sports360AZ.com. I watched the Suns game last night, and I was all over what was going on the college basketball scene with March Madness. But the Mark Cuban rip on the NFL continues to fascinate me, because if Mark Cuban looks at the NFL and says, it's broke, and it's only going to get worse. And I've said for the last 3 years doing this show that I think the NFL is headed down a perilous path. Mark Cuban went on a rant last night on social media that I want to get to a little bit later on in the show as well. Jared Cohen is in today for Eric. Eric is heading on out to Anaheim. He'll be with the U of A. Our coverage brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it's all about you, out in Anaheim as the U of A takes on San Diego State in the Sweet 16 on Thursday night. In about 8 minutes, 9 minutes, we'll have Russ Pennell with us. Let's get you caught up some of things on my mind in the world of sports now, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains, where we are just outside of Pine Top. Who wouldn't want to head out to the Honda Resort and Casino? Hear the winning, the coins are dropping, eat some great food, have some fun, check out the sports. Get away. Today up here in Pine Top, it's in the, I'd say, the high 50s, low 60s. It is absolutely gorgeous. When you come up to the White Mountains, the Honda Resort and Casino, that is the place to be. The Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. So the Suns game last night, and I bring them up first because I think it's important for you to know. You may have taken your eye off the radar a little bit. They are today, as we sit here, tied for the final playoff spot with the Dallas Mavericks. Suns win over Atlanta. The Suns were not good early, I didn't think. As the game progressed, I thought in the third quarter they got better and better, and that Channing Frye was a big part of that. Here is Jeff Hornacek after last night's game on Channing Frye coming through in a big way for the Suns. This was after last night's game.
Channing gave us a lift early. He got going. I think his threes have not been falling like expected from him. So that was nice.
And for Hornacek, it was a big third quarter for the Suns last night that helped them get the victory.
I thought the beginning of the third quarter was a difference for us. I didn't think we were playing all that great. We were kind of just playing. And then the third quarter, we came out and really got after it defensively, and consequently, I think we had 35 points. So that was a good way to start the second half.
They're a fun team to watch when they hit their shots. If they're not hitting their shots, they're brutal. They were 12 of 24 from three-point country. Eric Bledsoe led the way with 20. As mentioned, in the eighth playoff spot, if the playoffs were to start today, they would meet up with San Antonio. That would be tomorrow. Jared has our Facebook question of the day, and I ran right through that. My apologies, but our Facebook question of the day around the Suns. Fire away, Jared.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. We're good. It's Suns related, so let's stay on the Suns topic that you mentioned. As of today, they are in the eighth and final spot of the playoffs, and we've seen the highs and lows with this team of late. And I ask you and everyone else in the Facebook world, when this team is clicking, who is stepping up, or what is the difference when they win games, and what's the problem when they lose?
When they step up and when they win, it's they hit their three-point shots. when they lose, it's because they don't hit their three-point shots. How's that? Is that straightforward enough for you?
That's pretty straightforward, yep. Is there a player, too? So are you insinuating Channing Frye could be a key piece to this team when they're winning games?
Well, I'm not insinuating. I'm just saying. It's just a fact. It's not splitting atoms here. You know, If they don't hit their threes, then look, do I feel like as the season has gone on that Miles Plumlee has regressed some? Yeah, I do. I don't think there's any question he's not the player that he was early in the season. Markieff Morris, Marcus Morris, they have their moments. At times they look very good. Other times they make some decisions I'm just not that enthused with. But when it comes time for Goran Dragic or Eric Bledsoe or Channing Frye from downtown, Jared, I think it's pretty evident. When you go 12 of 24 from three-point country, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape if you play a lick of defense. And they didn't play very good defense last night in the first half. So head over to Facebook. .com/sports360az, put it in there, and get in your vote. Suns win over Atlanta. They're off today. They're in Washington for tomorrow night. Then they have the Knicks in town on Friday. Could Friday's game be the final time that we see Amari Stoudemire in a New York Knicks uniform? Sounds like there's a column there that needs to be written about the impact of Amari or the lack thereof. I've said on this show many times, as critical as I've been of Robert Sarver, somebody at some point should step forward other than me and say, hey, you know what? Robert actually did the right thing and the smart thing by not re-signing Amari and letting him go to New York. And what a train wreck they are. So that comes up on Friday night. Good story coming into town this week with Amari back in town. A couple other things around the NBA. And again, Russ Pennell in about 5 minutes, and we'll talk all things March Madness. Kevin Durant now has gone 35 straight games of scoring 25 points or more in 35 straight games. That, to me, it's under the radar screen. The last player with a streak longer than that was a guy named Michael Jordan. I think you remember him. Michael Jordan had 40 games in a row of 25 points or more. That's the last time that happened in the NBA. So while Kevin Durant is not getting a whole lot of attention, I think it's amazing what Kevin Durant is doing. I also think it's pretty cool what Philadelphia is doing. Let's blow really bad. Let's be so bad that we'll be on a historic level. The 76ers have lost 25 in a row. The Suns couldn't come this close to tanking as they did last season. Philadelphia's worse. If I'm a 76er fan, I enjoy it. I kind of like what's going on there. And the Heat play the Pacers tonight, always worth watching. On the NFL front, so the league, and we'll talk with Ron Borges from the NFL meetings in about 20 minutes. The league today has passed a rule that I've sat here for the last 2 years and have screamed and argued and fought about, and that is, guys, this really isn't that hard. The NHL has all reviews go through the league office in Toronto. The NFL should follow the NHL and do the exact same thing. It doesn't have the guy, you don't need to have the guy under the hood. You don't need to have the stadium be anxious because the stop of play has taken place. The NFL has passed a rule that it hopes will make instant replay more effective. The owners voting today to allow the referee to talk with members of the NFL department during replay reviews. He'll be able to talk to the head of officiating in New York. They're going to have a command center. It's really not that hard to go down to Costco and buy, I don't know, 7 or 8 monitors, and buy a phone and put a guy on a headset and say, hey, so what are you guys seeing back there that maybe we're not seeing here? Or the one replay that we have here, it's really not that hard. It's really not that difficult. So I like that. A lot of debate today about what is going on with Michael Vick going to the Jets. We'll talk all things NFL with Ron Borges here in a few minutes. The Cuban story, I'll get into that too. He wrote last night on Facebook, and he talked about it on Sunday night. He actually got into fantasy football and how fantasy football is one of the downfalls of the NFL. And fantasy football, he writes, TV saturation is not the NFL's biggest risk. What is their biggest risk? Fantasy football. Yep, fantasy football. This is coming from Mark Cuban. When I broached the topic of the NFL being too aggressive and possibly devolving from piggy territory to hoggy territory, the recurring response was that fantasy football is the difference, that fantasy football drives interest in the NFL. Is that true? What does everyone else think? How much is the NFL worth in aggregate? At least an average of $1 billion per team, question mark. And with the whole probably being worth more than the sum of the parts, the NFL, if it's with a public entity, with all the teams in a single holding company traded on the stock market, what would that be worth? Half of Facebook, Twitter, or about $100 billion? Could a $100 billion venture really be dependent on how many people sign up for leagues to get points for plays and bragging rights with their friends? If the answer is yes, that is a problem for the NFL and, to a lesser extent, all sports. More of Mark Cuban. Does anyone believe that in 10 years Facebook will be dominant social network? It might be. What about Twitter? Will it be a player? Will Google dominate? How will they dominate? It's really interesting because you watch Mark Cuban do Shark Tank. And I've talked with Mark Cuban before. I've had him on shows. I've not had him on this show, but I've had him on shows before. And he is brilliant. Some people hate him. He's one of these guys that I equate him to. It's like when Danny Ainge played. Everybody hated Danny Ainge except the team he was on. Mark Cuban, because he sits on the sidelines for the Mavericks, you hate him. Shark Tank, though, has put him in a completely different space. Very smart guy. He goes further into fantasy football and the downside of the NFL. He went on a rant last night that was tremendous. It was tremendous. All right, on the other side, Russ Pennell will be with us. Take a break here. Russ Pennell, Central Arkansas Bears head coach, former head coach at Grand Canyon University, known throughout the Valley scene. Talk with him about March Madness, his next step in life, and then more as we roll on. I'm Brad Sussmat. Today on the road, we are in Pine Top Sholo. We're at Lucano's Restaurant. Great spot if you come up to the White Mountains. On sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360az.
Sports 360 AZ, Brad Sussmat on AZ Central. Great to be partnered up with the Arizona Republic as we grow digitally on White Mountain Radio. That's across the great state of Arizona. And on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat, a lot of different ways to take in today's show. As always, Ron Borges, national football columnist with the Boston Herald, from the owners' meetings in Orlando in about 10 minutes. ESPN's Pedro Gomez joins us in hour number two. Yesterday, I had Lute Olson on the show, and it was good to talk to Lute. I saw him out in San Diego last week at the first round of the March Madness. Eric is going to be out with U of A for Sweet 16, and then I'll be with them if they go on to the Final Four. One guy who is close to the U of A program, because he actually was there in a couple different capacities, and of course went to Grand Canyon and now has moved on to Central Arkansas, the head coach of the Bears, Russ Pennell. Should I be surprised that you took this job? I wasn't surprised. Should I have been?
No, Brad, it was a great opportunity. I played there a long, long time ago. I'd say when the earth was cooling, and my wife went to school there, so it was a good fit for us and a great opportunity.
Yeah, I've talked about you in a way that there are people that make a difference in high school basketball, junior high basketball, in refereeing, in the game itself. You're one of those guys that top to bottom has made an imprint in Arizona. You've coached collegiately, you've done club, you've done all sorts of things. Was it difficult to say it's time to pull up stakes?
Well, first of all, thank you for that compliment. And yes, it's very difficult leaving Arizona. My family really loves it here. Both of my daughters know nothing more than living in Arizona. And so that part of it is the negative to this. But I think that the positives are an opportunity to go to a school that's very hungry. They pursued me. They want me there. And that's a good feeling. And I believe the potential to build a good basketball program in the Southland Conference is available at Central Arkansas. You know, Brad, they've been good in every sport but men's basketball. So the leadership there is in place for it to be successful, and we just need to go in and put some hours in and see if we can find some players.
Well, and when I talk about the high school scene here, Russ, I think you're going to come back here. You've already come back here, and you've already landed one very good player to go back there. You're going to have Arizona as an imprint. Am I right on that?
Well, I hope so. And, you know, the unique thing about Arizona and the Phoenix metropolitan area is the fact that there's not as many choices in Arizona as other states. I mean, you still have, you know, U of A and ASU are looking for a particular type of player. NAU and GCU, more of the mid-major guys. But the majority of players in this state have always had to go out of state to continue their college career. And what I'm hoping we can do is, you know, maybe once every couple of years there's a kid and he fits us and we're able to lure him that way. But I always found that, you know, even when I was doing the club scene, a number of our kids, you know, had to get on an airplane to go somewhere for college. And so that'll be an area here in Phoenix that we will always keep our eye on.
Russ Pennell with us for a couple of minutes. Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central, part of the Arizona Republic, on White Mountain Radio and on Twitter. Russ Pennell, Central Arkansas Bears head coach, on all things for him, which I think is a terrific move. Do you see yourself trying to schedule games out here against any of the schools within the state?
Well, I think with us recruiting out west, you always try to return to the area of young men that are coming from those areas. So if we would get some West Coast kids, which I can't talk about certain guys right now until they sign, but you alluded to a young man that likes us. And but yes, we would attempt to do that. And you know, I think in time, I don't think right now we're ready to play the caliber of a U of A or ASU type team yet. But I think in time we will try to schedule some games out this way. And in fact, I think it was just 3 years ago that Central Arkansas actually played Arizona State out in Tempe. So they have done that in the past.
All right, if I would have told you that in March Madness that you would have a coach at Louisville who coached Kentucky, and now he's the coach at Louisville, and Kentucky's going to meet Louisville, would you have believed that storyline around Rick Pitino?
Well, it is a fascinating story. And, you know, with a guy like Rick Pitino, he's had such a storied career. He's tried the pro game. And in the college game, every place he's been successful. And what he's done at Louisville the last 5 years has just been phenomenal. And the storyline of having to play against his old team, Kentucky, you know, I think is a fascinating one. But I do believe the fact that Louisville and Kentucky play every year in the regular season, after the first couple of years that Pitino played against the Wildcats, I think it was it's now just kind of a story, but not the story. And right now, I think the biggest story is the fact that Kentucky is kind of finding their way as a talented young team that maybe hasn't come on quite as quick as what people thought. And then you got the defending champs who, you know, honestly could have been knocked out in the first game, but are awful dangerous. And I think it's going to be a fascinating matchup.
What do you see out of U of A so far?
I really like the way they're playing. I think they're real focused. And the thing that I think U of A does this year that they're doing better than in the past is I think they're great on the defensive end of the floor. I think Sean's always been a good defensive coach, but for whatever reason, this team defends better. And I think a lot of it is they've got size and athleticism around the rim, so it's hard to score easy baskets against them. I think the concerns are always with them is how they're shooting the ball from the outside and if they're hitting their free throws. I think if they do those things at a relatively consistent level, I think they got a great chance of getting to the Final Four, and then from there you're talking about, you know, you're just going to have a little bit of luck. But I do think they're playing awful good basketball, and I think they're going to be hard to beat.
You know, watching them in person out there, not only last week but the week before, we were out at the Pac-12 tournament doing our show too. Guy like Gabe York comes in and doesn't get very much of any – it's a footnote. And there's been a couple spots in the game, and Hollis Jefferson, I thought, the other night gave them a lift. But a couple spots with them recently where they've had to have other guys give them a bit of a lift, and some of those nondescript guys are starting to be descript players. You know what I mean by that?
Well, absolutely, and I think that's pretty commonplace when you see a team, especially if they get to the Final Four or even have the good fortune to win the national championship, it's always an unsung guy. And that's why, you know, a guy like York or even, I know Jordan Mays got some minutes the other day, those guys have to be ready all the time. And what we fail to remember is these guys were highly touted coming out of high school also. They may not have the same hype as the Gordons and the Johnsons and those guys, but these guys in their own right are very, very good basketball players, and I'm sure for Sean and his staff, the thing he wants to preach to those kids on the bench is they have to be ready at a moment's notice, and they do have to contribute, and York is a fine outside shooter, and I would think he would play a significant role in these next couple of games trying to get to the Final Four.
One of the really good guys who's built up high school, college, club basketball is leaving our state, Russ Pennell with Brad Susmat, the head coach now at Central Arkansas, the Bears, for a couple of minutes as we talk March Madness, him building a program, and the mark that he's left on the state as he moves into the next chapter in life. UCLA, Russ, when you look at UCLA, is that a team that has enough? They're peaking right now. Do they have enough to push through in this next round?
There's no question they do, and the biggest reason is Kyle Anderson. He is a nightmare matchup for people. He's the closest thing I think we've seen to Magic Johnson in a while. I'm not calling him Magic Johnson, but just the fact he has the size, the ball handling ability, he passes the ball incredibly well, and I think he's playing about as well as he's played. But it almost looks like to me that UCLA is taking a big, deep breath. They've gotten in this second season, so to speak, in the NCAA tournament, and they're just playing basketball with really, I think, almost carefree. I love the way they're playing. And they took a very good Stephen F. Austin team who'd won 29 games in a row, and I thought they made them look ordinary. And I thought their schemes on the defensive end to kind of take away the little wheel offense that Stephen F. runs, I thought they did a magnificent job, but I really like the way they're playing, and they've done that really since the Pac-12 tournament.
And what I liked about Stephen F. Austin out in San Diego, so before the game was being played, there were some of the people that were around Stephen F. Austin that were talking, not around people, but in the media lounge about, we've got to get a late flight back and all this and that. And then the next day you see them and they're a little bleary-eyed because it hit them that they're actually able to stay. That's the beauty that people don't see behind the scenes of this tournament. But as we move forward, there's not a team that you look at, or is there a team you look at that you say, you know, Brad, there is a Cinderella still sitting out here that I can see playing in the title game, or are we now down to business is going to be business, the expected will happen?
I think you'll see the expected will happen. And I think there's a couple teams, that maybe are surprised by some people. When I think of Dayton and Tennessee and maybe even Baylor. But the thing about especially Tennessee and Baylor, I think they're very talented teams. It took them a while to kind of gel. And they're good enough from the talent standpoint that they could go a long, long way. Dayton played in very tough Atlantic 10 type schedule. They don't have the household name, but I do believe their players are quality. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to see the Michigan States, the U of A's, the Virginias, those type teams, I think, are going to prevail, and we may, see high seeds across the board at the Final Four this year, which the last couple of years we've had, whether it was Wichita State or VCU or a couple years ago, George Mason. I don't know we're going to see that this year.
Before I let you go, as you go into this next page, as I said, you're turning the page, what in Arizona needs to happen for basketball to become better? I think it's a lot better from the 20 years I've been here, but what needs to happen to keep moving it forward? Doesn't matter if it's club, high school, college, what needs to happen so that there's more passion in the state? Because I still sense in Tucson crazy passion. I sense over at GCU you started something over there that there's passion there. ASU, it's still kind of sort of something to do in between football season and spring football. That's not a slam on Herb. That's just the perception. What do you see as you go on to your next journey?
Well, I think it has to start from the grassroots level. And I think there's a couple of situations that have to occur. You've got to get some consistency when kids are, in the third, fourth, fifth grade and get them really, really interested in the sport itself. And I think there's some organizations that are doing that. I think there's more of those type club programs, training facilities than there's ever been before. What you have to do, you have to get the masses playing the game. And then from there, the cream will rise to the top. And I think what I saw this year, Brett, and I watched a lot of high school games with not being in college this year and having my own team. I went to a basketball game almost every Tuesday, Friday night, and I saw better crowds this year than I saw in years. So I think the support is there. I think, you know, just the signing of this 2014 class, a lot of high Division I players, whether they're going to Stanford, BYU, ASU, they're going out there. They're out there in this class in Phoenix. And I believe what you just said, the last 20 years it's gotten better, and I got to believe the next 10 to 15, it's going to get even further down the road. As far as the ASU thing, that's a mystery to everyone. I worked out there for 6 years myself, and it's been the same thing. It doesn't matter whether it's Eddie House, Ike Diagu, James Harden, Jahi Carson. It's the same amount of people that come out, and I'm sure that they scratch their head out there all the time. But it's one of the great mysteries to me why ASU doesn't have that rabid fan base that U of A has.
I'll let you go off that. I really do appreciate everything that you've done here. You were a trendsetter with Premier and an academy and a warehouse, and I know you're going to do well out there, and I hope to see you back in the Valley and stay in touch.
Brad, you've been a good friend. I appreciate it, and hope we stay in touch.
There's Russ Pennell with us for a couple of minutes. Appreciate his time. On the other side, we go to the NFL owners' meetings. Ron Borges, Boston Herald, covering the NFL down in Orlando. Mike Vick, DeSean Jackson, referees, the draft order, Bortles, Manziel, all next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com, on the road on AZ Central Sports. Going to be part of the Arizona Republic on White Mountain Radio across the great state and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Pedro Gomez, all things baseball with ESPN, comes up in about 15 minutes. Let's go out now to Orlando. The NFL owners' meetings are in place. One of the leading NFL writers, actually writers for the Boston Herald and around the National Football League, Hall of Fame voter Ron Borges, joins us for a couple of minutes from Orlando. Biggest storyline down there to you today, Ron?
Well, Brett, that's a that's a good question. It's been kind of slow here. Usually you hear talking about labor issues and all these sort of things that have now been taken care of. But I guess it's probably the fact that they're going to do some more centralized sort of replay out of New York, sort of like hockey does, and probably makes some sense to a degree. That instead of putting it all on the head official, now he's going to be able to have contact with the head of officials in New York and what they've seen and what their position is. And I think it probably, in the grand scheme of things, is will be helpful, although maybe initially administrating it all will be a little interesting.
All right, so from that standpoint, Ron, let's get into this a little bit. Referees, replays are going to go through the New York office. It seems like on the surface, because I've always believed the NHL has done it the right way, and I could never understand, guys, it can't be that hard to go to a electronic store and buy some flat screens and put a guy in a headset in New York rather than have the official have the 70,000 fans on top of him, pace of play slows down. What was the thinking behind finally accepting this?
Well, I think it's exactly what you say, Brad. Here's this poor referee looking under a hood. These 78,000 people are screaming and yelling. You know, you can put on all the headphones you want, but it's not like he doesn't know he's in a stadium full of those people and whose stadium it is. Not that it necessarily will change the decision he makes, but wouldn't it be easier to have a guy in a room someplace where he doesn't have to deal with it? I always used to think that there should have been someone upstairs, the replay official upstairs in a private room, making the decision himself rather than putting it on the live official on the field. So I think you're exactly right on what they're thinking was, and it certainly has worked well in hockey, so there's no reason why it shouldn't work well in the NFL.
On the field, so Mike Vick goes to New York. DeSean Jackson, it's out there. should there be buyer beware, Ron, that Chip Kelly, is Chip Kelly just trying to push DeSean Jackson, or if Mike Vick wasn't good enough for the Eagles, wherever he goes, if he's not good enough for Chip Kelly, maybe there should be a red flag, or is it, you know what, Brad, this is just part of the business where a vet quarterback goes elsewhere. Don't try to read too much into this.
I think it's more of the latter. I think, you know, you got a new coach who comes in. He really doesn't have any connection to these guys. They're older players. DeSean Jackson's case is 35. He's on the books to make $10 million. You're a new guy coming in. You're trying to start your program going. And you look at him and say, is he going to be with me when my program's really rolling? Well, probably not. He's already 35, so why am I paying him $10 million when I can use that money to bring in some younger guys that are going to be with me when things are flying? So I think to a great extent, that's what's going on in both of these cases, because a lot of people would argue that Michael Vick is still the best quarterback they had there. But he comes with a lot of baggage. He comes with some age. He comes with a lot of injuries. And so if you're a new guy coming in, you say, look, I got no commitment to this guy. I would like my own guy and train him my own way.
Flip it around then. Mark Sanchez going to Philadelphia. And if you're Nick Foles, what do you think? If you're a former USC quarterback on the roster who's sitting there, what do you think?
Well, if you're Nick, if you're Nick Foles and you see the tape of that butt fumble of Sanchez with the Jets, you probably say I'm in pretty good shape. I guess to a degree, you know, you have to look at it and say, well, I'm in a competitive position here, since you know it's my job to lose. So if I play well enough, there should be no reason to give it to Mark Sanchez or anybody else. Hopefully that's how he looked at it. In Sanchez's case, and from Chip Kelly's perspective, I think, you know, now you're talking about a younger guy who had some early success, you know, took two teams to the AFC Championship game, and then kind of faded for a lot of different reasons. And so let's take a look at it. But let's see. Look, he had some success, so it's not like he never did anything in the league. And I think that's the way – I know that's the way Kelly's looking at it.
Ron Borges is one of the best in the business, Hall of Fame voter, Boston Herald, in the NFL owners' meetings in Orlando with Brad Sussmat for a couple of minutes. What are you hearing around draft order? If the draft were to be held today, the first, second, third, first, second pick, where do you think it would land today, Ron?
Well, it's pretty interesting. I was talking to Bill O'Brien, the Houston Texans head coach, for quite a while today, because, of course, they have the number one pick. And I've known Billy for a long, long time. He's a Massachusetts guy, so... he really has no idea himself, and they're the ones who are going to have to make that pick, because unlike a lot of years, you know, there's, in his opinion, there's three, four, five quarterbacks. Nobody, one may be a little better than the other, but none separated himself in the way, say, an Andrew Luck did a couple years ago. And defensively, Clowney, of course, is the player that everybody looks at talent-wise and say, well, you know, he should be the number one guy. But there's all these other questions about how hard does he play, and does he play hard enough, often enough, and what happens if you give him a lot of money, if he already is kind of taking plays off, does he take too many plays off? So he's in a weird situation in that you have the number one pick, and you have a team that won two games, even though it's probably better than its record. And so you can really make an impact unless you pick the wrong guy and there's no clear guy. And I think that that's the dilemma of holding that number one pick this year over some other years where John Elway comes out. You're pretty sure you want to take John Elway. I know as they sit here today, they don't really know which way they're going.
Interesting. Let me throw some quick hits by before I get you out of here. If I say Jim Kelly, what goes through your mind?
Jim Kelly?
Jim Kelly, the Bills quarterback.
Yeah, sad story. Sad story. Great player. In a lot of battling cancer, has had, you know, all the tragic situation with his son. Guy deserves a break.
Oakland Raiders, where are they going to be 5 years from now?
Good question. I got a feeling they're not going to be owned by the Davis family. I just think that the point's going to come. But Mark Davis decides, you know, this is more trouble than it's worth. And in the back of my mind, Brad, I know that they still have stationery that says Los Angeles Raiders in expensive forms that say Los Angeles Raiders. So somehow or other, they're going to try to get back to Los Angeles.
quick hit on Mark Cuban and his thoughts on the NFL in the last 24 hours in the news cycle.
I thought it was pretty pretty interesting. Cuban's a smart guy, and he certainly has seen other sports, and we've all seen other sports, that hit critical mass and went too far, even college football. I'm going to date myself. But when I came up as a young guy, you know, there was the game of the week on Saturday. Everybody focused. Everybody watched Texas, Oklahoma. Everybody watched, you know, Army, Navy, whoever it was. Now there's so many games up, you don't watch any of them in many cases, you know, 65 games a week. And I think the NFL, you could see it on Thursday night where their ratings weren't good, which is one of the reasons they went to CBS for their Thursday night package. When you put out too many matchups that aren't good, people start to say, what's so special about this? And I think Cuban's right. I think they have to be a lot more careful with that than maybe the average person would think they should be.
Boy, his rant last night, Ron, on Facebook, he went further last night, and it's about 2,000 words. And it's he's getting into fantasy football, player behavior. Interesting because he's right on a lot of fronts.
He's right because those things threaten your game. You know, when you have too many guys in handcuffs, you know, this fall or at some point probably before the end of the year, there's going to be a murder trial involving the guy who 2 years ago was playing in the Pro Bowl. You got almost 3 or 4 days don't go by that somebody doesn't get arrested. You got Darren Sharper with his terrible sexual assault charges against him. And you don't want to prejudge anybody, but that cannot be good. And if it begins to mount and mount and mount, you have a problem with your customers because they start saying, wait a minute, I can't even relate to these people. And on top of all that, you've got a generation coming up where less, more and more moms are saying, no, you're not playing football because of the fear of concussion. So that generation is going to have a less firm, the game is going to have a less firm of a grip on them than for those of us who played it, you know, as kids or played it in high school or even played it in college. There's going to be less of those. So if I don't have firm grip, number one, and now things are going off the tracks, number two, and I'm showing them too many bad games, you've got a bad situation.
Well, and then what do you do with an owner that runs into a personal situation like Evan Indianapolis to put on top of the player in handcuffs? And this is just uncharted territory from my view. I mean, I have to think back to the DeBartolos the last time that there was an issue like this, and this is more severe in my opinion.
Well, I agree with you, and I think they are going to have to act and act pretty harshly because you know, the public's watching and the players are watching and the players are going to sit there and say, no, wait a minute, you know, you have no problem, you know, fining us here and suspending us there and this, that, and the next thing. But the guy's an owner and he comes, you know, staggering into a police station. We've all seen the video and you're going to do nothing because he put himself in rehab. So I think they know they have to do something. The question is, how severe is it going to be? Number one. And the other thing is, how much can you do your boss, which in the end, these owners are the commissioner's boss.
Last question for Ron Borges on all things NFL. He joins us from the NFL owners meetings in Orlando. Then what is your big question mark, team, player, as we're sitting here in March, that you feel like, boy, I don't know if I've got a good answer on this issue, and it's looming out. There could be a team with a player, could be NFL related as an entity. Biggest question in your mind, Ron?
Well, for me personally, as I look at it, maybe it's because I have some of a personal interest in it, is the Broncos and the Patriots and the great arms race that they've engaged in here in the offseason. You know, I'm signing your guy, well, I'm signing Darrell Revis, well, I'm signing this guy, I'm signing. But in the end, one quarterback is 38 and the other one is 37. When is one of them going to slip to the point where all these other things that they're doing to try to improve their teams don't make a difference because his play has begun to slip too much? And certainly if you looked at last season, you say, what are you talking about? Manning looked great, so did Brady, which they did. But in the end, in the last two games that we saw them, the AFC Championship game in Brady's case and the Super Bowl in Manning's case, neither one of them looked very good. And so you could say, okay, one-shot deal. Teammates didn't help them and so forth. But to me, that's a situation with a 38- and 37-year-old quarterback that I think deserves to be watched pretty closely. Can those guys bring their team back again? Or is the game starting to pass?
Really enjoyed the visit and the insight from there in Orlando. Appreciate the time, Ron. Thanks.
Thank you. Sure thing, Brad.
Ron Borges there, Boston Herald, NFL Hall of Fame voter, in the middle of it all, right in the middle of the owners' meetings. Appreciate his time and his insight. We continue on, Brad Sussmat, with you from Pine Top and Sholo today. Want to thank Frontier Communications, residential commercial service. Call 537-6610, 537-6610, Frontier Communications, as we broadcast from Locano's. Back with more after this time out as we continue on sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
Back here in Pine Top today, doing the show on the road as part of what we do here at Sports360AZ and on White Mountain Radio, on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat and AZ Central Sports. Thanks again to Ron Borges and Russ Pennell. Pedro Gomez comes up in hour number two. Today from Lucano's, great place. If you're in the vicinity, if you come on into Sholo, you cannot miss Lucano's. The food is great, great crowds, great people. That is at Lucano's. So Lute Olson was on the show yesterday, and we have a little bit of sound from that that I wanted to get back into. I had some people that sent me notes saying it was good to hear Lute, and they had heard that his health wasn't well and that he actually sounded pretty good. I hadn't even thought of that. All I know is I saw Lute Olson in San Diego last week while we were out there, and he is sharp as ever. He's working for the U of A. Here is Lute Olson on U of A as they get ready for San Diego State, advancing the story ahead. Lute Olson on SDSU U of A in Thursday night's matchup.
Well, I think it's going to be a good game. All you have to do is look at the history of this series, and the game in Hawaii. What was that, a year ago? And
yep, Nick made a big play there to save it.
Yeah, Nick saved it. You know, San Diego State is big, and they're very talented. So. When you look at the history of that series, most of the games have been very, very closely contested.
And I think if you look at this matchup, if you're an Arizona Wildcat fan, you come in saying we've played really well on the road. We had a home crowd that was there in San Diego. We had a home crowd that was in Las Vegas. Even though we didn't win, we just didn't make some free throws. That happens. As I look at it, and see where the U of A is. San Diego State's a really hard matchup for them. And look, defensively, you can get after it. But what makes U of A so good is they have size inside. Even without Brandon Ashley, I think they figured out their length because the athleticism. Nick Johnson will come inside and slap away a shot. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson will do the same thing. And Caleb Tarzewski takes up a lot of space. But San Diego State has just as big a front line. So this is not one of those games you look at and say, boy, we're U of A. It's 7:20 on Thursday night. We're going to roll the ball out and everything's going to be just fine. No, this is going to be a hell of a matchup. It's the only way to put it. I mean, a terrific matchup to check out. You have Florida, UCLA. You have Virginia, Michigan State. And you look at those games and you say, you know, those are heavyweight battles. You have Louisville, Kentucky. But Arizona and San Diego State is one of those matchups that comes along that I think there's a level of intrigue about it. They've played one another earlier this season. It was a close game, tough game. Well, much more on that. Eric is out in Anaheim with the U of A. That is where the Sweet 16 will be played, at the Pond in Anaheim. And he'll join us tomorrow and Thursday and Friday as well. Our coverage of March Madness is brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. General Manager Tim Hovick is a huge Valley sports fan. You see him on billboards all around the Valley. You see the Santan Ford logo on our website. People click on it. They want their car. They want their truck. I like the fact that Tim is a huge sports fan. On those billboards, he's ripping open his shirt and showing a Diamondback jersey underneath. They are a big part of the Diamondbacks. On the college basketball front, Tim says to me, Brad, wherever you go, go, and Santan Ford is there with you, as are the Arizona Ford dealers. That is huge. If you want to be involved with someone that is behind you, stop on into Santan Ford, Santan Ford, where it's all about you, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. That is Santan Ford, Santan Ford. It is all about you. Appreciate their support. A little bit more on March Madness here. We have a couple minutes before the top of the hour. Pedro Gomez in hour two. The NFL is king of American sports right now, but the NCAA men's basketball tournament has overtaken it in a key category. The NCAA tournament has generated $1.15 billion in ad revenue in 2013. The Big Dance is the richest of all American sports, passing the $1.1 billion for the 11 games of the NFL playoffs. So think of it from this perspective. Here you are, you're the NCAA, and you're telling little New Mexico State the other night, after they lost to San Diego State, get on a plane, you're out of here, you lost, go home, we don't want you staying in our hotels because we can't afford it. Of course you can't. You're only at $1.15 billion in ad revenue. When it comes to paying players, why would we think about paying players? We have free labor right now. We're generating $1.15 billion in ad revenue. The whole thing about student athlete, to me, if you look at it, just let's just say UCLA or Arizona. Let's go through the last couple of weeks. So Arizona, they've been to Oregon and Oregon State on a Thursday, Saturday, which means they missed school on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then they left there and they went right to Las Vegas because they were in the Pac-12 tournament. So then they're in Las Vegas. Then they go right from there over to back to Tucson, then over to San Diego, and now they're going up to Anaheim. So let's just stop the charade of students first. They're athletes first. And when you see the NCAA get $1.15 billion in ad revenue, that just shows even more that the NCAA wants it. They're a bunch of greedy guys. I've heard that from people around programs. The NBA playoffs comes in third with $929 million in revenue. Major League Baseball, fourth place, $529 million in revenue. It's like this. So you have this huge pie, and you say, well, we've already exceeded $500 million, $700 million, $900 million. Let's see if we can get to a billion with a B. And then they get into $1 billion in revenue. And it makes the Big Dance the richest of all American sports. But, hey, if we had to cut into some of that revenue and had to pay players, oh, my gosh, we wouldn't have that revenue anymore. What sense does that make? Come on. So they're just concerned about the dollar figure that's coming in. If they're getting $1.15 billion for basketball, what are they getting for football season? So they've already cleared $1 billion in revenue. So they can't increase a stipend? They can't say to each player, we're going to give you, doesn't matter if you're first on the roster or 10th on the roster in basketball, or first on the roster or 80th on the roster in football, or you're one on the softball roster or 20th on the softball roster, we're going to give each one of you $2,500 a semester. We're going to give each of you $2,500 a semester. Oh, my gosh, well, how could we do that for all Division I schools? We only have $1.15 billion in ad revenue. See where I'm coming with this? So you're asking these kids, you're not going to go to school. Then you have these kids that don't have any interest in being in school anyways. Andrew Wiggins, Julius Randle, I might even say Aaron Gordon to an extent. These kids don't really have an interest because they just want to get off to the NBA, their next stop. And so to give them $2,500 this year as an enticement to stay next year, that's not going to work. It's not going to happen. System's broke. There's no question about it. And I love watching the games. I'm all about the games, but the underpinnings to this story, if you don't look at the revenue side and say, well, gosh, they're making that much money, why can't they take care of little Johnny and little Susie? Why can't they do that? Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, on White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. It's great to be up in the high country. I'll get up here enough. Love being up here in Pine Top. Beautiful up here. Frontier Communications, thank them for their support. People in Sholo as well for residential and commercial service. Frontier Communications, also want to thank Lucanos. They've been hosting us through the day. There's plenty of content for you up on sports360az.com. It could be written, could be videos, all sorts of stuff. The recruiting roundup, very popular feature that Jared Cohen puts together with Jason Jewell. Eric out in Anaheim with U of A and much, much more. I'm Brad Sussman. Off we go in hour number two, Brad Sussmat with Sports 360 AZ on AZ Central Sports. Good to be partnered with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. Thanks again in hour number one to Russ Pennell and Ron Borges from the NFL Owners Meetings in Orlando. We turn our attention now to baseball, all things with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, with the season having already opened in Australia for a couple of games, but in reality, opening up this coming weekend and into next week, it is time to have, as Buck Showalter would call Pedro back in the day, Pete. How you doing, Pete?
Oh, man. Buck, J-Bell, and my wife are really the only ones that call me Pete.
Where did that come from? Did Buck hear from Jay?
I mean, it's kind of like Pedro Guerrero was called Pete Guerrero, and Roberto Alomar was Robbie Alomar, just Americanizing the name. No big deal. I was always fine with it.
I always thought that was interesting. I couldn't tell initially if it was like he was mad at you or if it was just he was loving on you. So I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe he thought it would be kind of a dick, but it never was to me. I was always good with it. And to this day, when I see him, he's always, Pete, how are you? We get along well now.
Okay, what did you make out of the Diamondbacks down in Australia other than they lost two games?
It's really, really difficult to say after just two games whether the team is flawed or not. I remember this vividly, Brad, you might also. In 1997, the Giants got spanked on opening day, and I mean spanked. I can't remember who they played, but they absolutely got destroyed, like 10-1 or 12-1, some really lopsided score. And I remember the next day, it was, the season's over, forget it, they can't do anything. And, on the last day of the season, they won the National League West. They were the ones on top of the division. They won it a little earlier than that. So you really cannot put that much into these two days. I would say the only thing that if you had to look at major differences is when you've got Clayton Kershaw and Hyun-Jin Ryu going, and you don't even have, you still have Zach Greinke in your holster, that's going to bode pretty well for the Dodgers in terms of talent in the starting rotation. And that's the one area where when you look at the Diamondbacks, you tend to see, you talk to baseball people and they tend to see a bunch of number threes, and the Dodgers have a bunch of number ones and twos. So that usually over the course of 162 games will affect the way clubs finish the season.
Talking with Pedro Gomez for a couple of minutes. Okay, so then let's you and I jump into Kevin Towers and Gibby and Ken Kendrick's shoes and say, well, here's what we were trying to do in the offseason. We knew we needed some help in pitching, so we knew we had Archie Bradley. We didn't want to rush him along, so we went after Tanaka. We didn't get Tanaka, but we had a backup plan. That was Bronson Arroyo. We didn't know Bronson was going to get hurt, and we couldn't foresee Patrick Corbin getting hurt. Now we're in a bit of a mess. Is that the way to sum this up from their view, do you think?
They are in a bit of a mess when it comes to the rotation, and internally they have to know it. The problem is that when you look at just about every club in baseball, there are issues with, I would say, 98% of them. The Dodgers, as good as they are and as much money as they're spending, their bench is not what it was last year. And in talking to some people, there's a strong belief that the four faces they're going to miss the most are Jerry Hairston, Skip Schumacher, Mark Ellis, and Nick Punto, because they brought so much character and unselfishness to that club. They weren't superstars by any means, but they mattered. And so every club has issues. Every club is facing problems. The Diamondbacks are no different. They're just facing them in the starting rotation, which some clubs absolutely have many clubs have the exact same issues. But, it's tough when you're in the same division with the club that has a rotation like the Dodgers do, or even the Giants, because they're so heavily stacked in that favor. And it's difficult to overcome those issues.
Yeah, and I think if you're Gibby, you have to know it. And it doesn't matter to me what Ken Kendrick said or when he extended them. It doesn't matter. I had Ken on about 3 weeks ago, and I still think the door is wide open. If they were sitting here circling around at 8-15 at the end of the first month of the season, then I wouldn't be surprised at all. I would not be shocked at all to see a change with the manager. I would be surprised with the general manager, but I won't be surprised if something happens, and I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't happen, Pedro, but I just think you got to be real on this one.
Well, you do, and you also have to look at track records. And Ken Kendrick, before he fired Josh Byrne, signed him to that 8-year deal. Even if you look in the broadcasting booth, Darren Sutton received a 5-year deal and was let go, I think, 3 or 4 months into that deal. So it's not like Ken Kendrick is afraid to pull the trigger when it comes to rebooting. And certainly, you know, yes, we do know that Gibson got re-upped, and certainly there's a lot of people in the organization that hope that that lasts, but Ken Kendrick is somebody that has shown that he doesn't have a long leash when it comes to trying to overcome issues. And so you're right. Just because he did get re-upped, by no means does that mean he's safe.
Okay, let me jump over on this one. Pedro Gomez with us, ESPN baseball analyst. We haven't visited in a while. The Puig angle of last season was, well, he's going to get through it, but he's a ticking time bomb. Bad guy, young guy, misdirected guy. Wait till next year. People are going to get him in the back, this, that. So then he goes down to Australia, and Mattingly can't really describe what's wrong with him, and Adrian Gonzalez gets into it with him. Now, did he get into it?
Which happened last year as well, remember?
Yeah, no, no. And so, but here we are, first two games of the season, and we already have Puig in L.A. Is this not going to end well for him in L.A.?
There are definitely people in the game that have that exact same feeling. You know, the last time we saw Puig, he was putting the bat on his hip after a called third strike in the playoffs by Ted Barrett. And to his great resolve, Ted Barrett did not toss Puig out of the game. If he had done that in a regular season game, Puig would have been gone in about 4 seconds. So you wonder, because you know the Dodgers have talked to him. You know that they have implored him to try to get that part of his game in a more professional demeanor. And 2 games into the season, it seems like the message just has not come across. And, Brad, yes, there are a lot of people that I've talked to in baseball that believe it's almost impossible that it could end well.
It's not a matter of
much talent as he has. That's sad to say, because boy, is there all-star talent in there.
Okay, one other question. I'll let you go off this. If you look at the National League West, can you make a case for anybody to challenge the Dodgers? I don't think you can, but can you make a case for all the other teams?
Yeah, no, I can.
Really, really.
I like, you know what, the Giants, because there is a lot of good. First of all, the starting rotation. I know that Matt Cain hasn't put together Cy Young-type seasons, but he has that type of talent. Lincecum certainly is somebody that is pushing himself to show that he is as good as he was a few years ago, and he's still not reached his 30th birthday. And Madison Baumgartner, maybe one of the top 5 pitchers in the game. So you're looking at a very, very, very good rotation. Brian Sabian, always, much like Kevin Towers, has put together very good bullpens. I know that last year the problem was scoring runs, but you know, you add a Michael Morse to the middle of the lineup, and he's certainly motivated to try to get back into good graces among baseball people. Posey is as good as they get. Pablo Sandoval is in the last year of his contract. And we know that guys who are in contract years tend to have really good seasons. So I would not be surprised if the Giants are able to contend.
Okay, so then the rest of the division, I think the Padres have gotten better. I can't quite figure out Colorado, and I think the Diamondbacks are the enigma. There, I've summed it up.
Pretty much. I think you have summed it up there fairly well. The Padres are improved. They just can't get out of the way of their own injuries, unfortunately for them. But they've got some good things going on down there. Andrew Cashner, their opening day starter, had a really good spring, and there's a lot of people in baseball who think he is poised to finally be that first round pick that he was of the Cubs a few years ago. The Rockies, yeah, who knows? Who knows what they're doing right now? It's just they don't seem to be moving forward, moving the chain, so to speak. And the Diamondbacks, I don't know. Is it going to be 81 and 81 again?
Right, Right. It's going to be somewhere around there. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and visiting with you as always. Thanks.
Brad, always great. Take care.
Here's Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, for a couple of minutes. A couple of things here before we get out in this segment. Russ Pennell, you'll hear from Russ Pennell, head basketball coach, Central Arkansas Bears, formerly at Grand Canyon University, formerly ASU assistant, formerly U of A. He's been at three of the four programs. It's pretty good. Russ is one of those guys that's done a lot around the high school and club scene. He was a pioneer of club basketball, opening a premier gym academy about 10, 12 years ago. He had foresight there. He's leaving the state. Ron Borges is going to be with us from the NFL owners' meetings in Orlando. We'll talk much more about the National Football League. So the Suns go on to the victory, 102-95. Kevin Durant, 35 straight games of 25 or more points. The last player with a streak longer than that was Michael Jordan, who had 40 games in a row back in 1986-87. Philadelphia's lost 25 in a row. I love the fact that they're tanking. They may say they're not tanking, but 25 in a row, it's pretty impressive. We're going to blow so bad that we're going to find a way to lose 25 games in a row. The Heat play at the Pacers tonight. And, of course, in college basketball, you have Arizona in the Sweet 16 against San Diego State. Eric is out there with the Wildcats. We'll have much more from Eric tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday as well. Coyotes lost in overtime last night. Mike Smith beat up. They play at the Pittsburgh tonight. No more on Mike Smith's injury. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio. From Lucano's today, I want to thank Frontier Communications for residential and commercial service. Call 537-6610, 537-6610. Russ Pennell is next. I'm Brad Sussmat.